Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Monk Recap, October 7th, 2015. It is the Halloween season, I guess, maybe.
It is the Halloween season.
What accent is that?
A spooky one.
A spooky accent.
A spooky accent.
There. I am Myro Time, here alongside Rollo T. Chris, how are you doing?
I believe you mean Christopher Goulios and Nick Bulis Freeman.
That's terrible.
Oh, they're going to get better from here on in, I assure you.
You could have called me Y-Ruler of Slime or any number of things. You went for Nick Bulis? That's not even the right syllable.
No, it's not, but I feel it added a lot of Halloween character to your name.
No, it didn't.
Why Ruler of Slime? I mean, it sounds like you failed a health inspection. Nick Bulis Freeman, you're like, oh, Halloween, right, of course.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's totally necessary to go for that.
I feel it is. I feel like you're Shane on Halloween season already. And after such a scary lineup for Jump this week. Toriko, mostly. A lot of things happened in Toriko.
A whole lot of stuff happened.
A lot of murder and things like that.
A lot of stuff happened in Bleach.
You gotta pick this enthusiasm up, Nick. Halloween is about energy. It's about, basically it's about candy. And then once you get to be like 15, then it starts being about dressing in scantily clothing. And bobbing for apples. I'm not exactly sure. I haven't been out for Halloween in a very long time. People didn't invite me to parties, Nick.
Well, you're also a Catholic school kid, too. Halloween is the devil's or some shit like that. I don't know.
Look, Pokemon was also the devil. It didn't stop me from enjoying it.
I've never been a super Halloween kind of guy. Well, I guess I was when I was a kid, but ever since I, became a teenager.
Shocked you even was a kid, because you don't like chocolate.
Yeah, it was always a problem. Honestly, my parents have stories of how, I would go to doors, trick-or-treat, he's like, here you go, and I'd be like, oh, I don't like chocolate. And so before we went to the next door, my dad, was like, okay, look, your mom and I will eat the chocolate, so just say thank you. So go to the next door, here, have some chocolate. Thanks. I don't like it, but my mom and dad will eat it.
You ratted them out.
And we're like, all right, Nick, just from now on, say thank you and nothing else.
My mommy and daddy said I can't say anything to you or they'll get mad.
That's it. No more trick-or-treating ever.
Mommy and daddy say I have to go home now. I can't have any candy. They're taking me away and I don't want to go. Not my mommy. No lie, I actually said that to my mom once when I was like 3 or 4. We were grocery shopping. I don't know, for whatever reason. I have no reason why I did it. It was fucking ingenious of me, but I just screamed out, not my mommy, not my mommy, and pointed to her.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. I don't know the reason. I don't know what prompted it. But it was fucking brilliant at the time. Well, I want to jump into Weekly Manga Recap proper, because we'll be doing Monster next week.
Yes. Need some more time, personally, to read it myself. I'm enjoying the ride so far, but want to make sure I get everything in.
I mean, I had read this once before, but I am trying to go through it again. It's a dense read.
Yes.
Urasawa has a lot of dialogue.
Well, yeah.
And then a monthly series that ran for like 20 volumes.
So, we're going to go into the recap portion of Weekly Manga Recap instead. Starting off with Black Clover.
You mean Black Clover.
No.
Black Clover.
No. If you do Bleach, I'm going to be very disappointed with you.
Says you. You can't tell me what to do.
I didn't tell you what to do. I just said if you...
Fuego Leon is dead, Nick. We don't have time to argue like this. Spoilers. So
it's page 32, The One Who Waits Deep in the Darkness. Features a color page.
I feel like that's like a Kingdom Hearts stage, and when you go to it, you find Ansem. It's really one of those, like, square kind of titles. The One Who Waits Deep in the Darkness. It's too elaborate.
I don't know. I never played... Well, I did play Kingdom Hearts a little bit, and then I got bored with it and stopped. So, Anywho, so eye patch dude, whose name we learned last time, but fuck him. He is frustrated that he can't defeat Fuegoleon. And meanwhile, Lion and Noelle manage to come together and they defeat the other zombie they set against them by somehow evaporating it. So Fuegoleon's like, good job! You know, that's what qualifies you to lead this country as royals. And they both salute him and go, yes, sir! And then Noelle's like, oh, I got caught up in it and actually saluted. She gets all embarrassed. And Eye Patch Dude is like, no, this can't be! No! And Fuegoleon just uses, like, fire claws to hold him down.
I don't quite grasp how there's flame binding magic. I could understand rock binding magic. I could understand vine binding magic. I don't understand how flames hold someone. It seems like you just burn him.
Anything except flame, you know? Air.
I can understand, like, water. Like, it's like, I just can't get out of this, you know? Like, it's moving, but I don't really have zero gravity. Oh,
the fire, it's a little warm, and it's holding me in place.
No, it's a little warm. I'd be like, oh, no, I'm moving. I'm, like, in an inferno or something. Like, maybe that's what it's supposed to be. Like,
yeah, even if you were in, like, a ring of fire or something like that. But he's not. There's, like, claws crawling all over his body to hold him in place. And it's just like, oh, I'm held down. And not burning alive for some reason. So, Fuegoleon grabs his grimoire. Smart thing to do. But then... he looks in it and sees that there is only one page, and so he realizes that the guy can only use one spell. So the guy's freaking out, says, "Don't you dare look down on me!" And Fuegoleon, rather Asta, says, "Who would look down on you? Couldn't you have made people acknowledge you some other way? Even though you've got that awesome magic, oh, what a waste! Fuck you, Asta."
I've heard some people are angry that Asta says this because he's not being sympathetic to him, but I didn't really get that impression. Like, I kind of understand why people would want him to be that way, since this guy is, like, kind of on a similar track, like a dude who's just born with a shitty version of magic, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, this dude clearly made his choice in trying to terrorist bomb a city.
Right.
So I don't really stand on the notion of, like, Asta, how can you be so heartless to this guy? It's like, well, you know, to be fair, he did kind of deserve...
He did kind of help to kill people, yeah.
Yeah.
And Fuegoleon says, you were able to overcome adversity, but what you lacked was a just heart, so you will pay for your crimes. And at this moment, we learn two things. One, that both of these invaders, Eye Patch Dude and Witch Girl, had some sort of, like, magical transceivers in their ears, basically, so that someone who was instructing them could tell them what to do. And second, Asta has super senses. He just does.
This did confuse me.
It comes from absolutely nowhere. Asta has super senses. He has super hearing and super smell. And presumably, super sight. I don't know about that, though. But he can hear the voice whispering in the guy's ear. And later on, he is able to smell someone in a hill of corpses.
What if, Nick? What if? Because he's actually pretty short. What if the next sword he gets, finds a new spell, it's a pair of claws... and he becomes Wolverine. And this is the story of a young, magical but not magical Wolverine growing up in a world full of wizards.
So he should be like, even though you've got that awesome magic, bub, what a waste. Eh?
Yeah. Like, what if, like, next week he's like, Fuegoleon, I'm always going to remember you. Da-da-da, bub. And, like, that's, like, your first hint. You're like, holy shit! And, like, then we find out, like, oh, it's Asta's dad, Schmeggy Logan, and we're like, oh shit, his name's Logan! It's all coming together!
Logan's his first name.
Well, look, we can only get so much. Look, actually, it's transcendent, actually, because that would make Asta's name Asta Logan, which, if you did the Japanese way, would be Logan Asta. Oh, God, boom. Dude. Boom, boom, boom. I made it work in my mind.
So I was willing to buy for a while. Okay, Asta's got no magic, but he has really exercised his body. And that's why he's able to wield his sword, and he's different from other mages who don't rely on their physical bodies. That makes sense. How do you train your hearing and smell to pick up whispers in someone's ear and hills and bodies within corpses that are still alive?
Maybe it's a byproduct of having, seemingly having that fifth source of magic. Because I guess, apparently, wind magic allows you to detect mana, or makes you more keen to it. I don't know. Maybe. It is very spontaneous of him just being like,
oh, I can hear that! I can smell that!
Just like someone being like, we'll never find this guy! He's right fucking there! Boom!
So, that was, I guess, it. Like, they needed an excuse for them to find him. I don't know.
They were like, shit, where's that stupid bird? Can't the bird find him? Fuck, alright, he'll just break the thing.
We learned that Catherine was the witch's name. Faelion is like, we know that there's a spatial magic user here with you, so where is he? And he also says, what is your true objective? You know, what was it, revenge? What, you know, what's going on? And Eyepatch 2 says, our objective is you, Faelion Vermilion! And he goes, what? And then, oh, suddenly he is spatial magicked away! So he shows up in this weird white void with these multiple magic circles hovering in front of him. He's like, oh, what is this place? And someone approaches him from behind, and he goes, you're... And then we cut away. So we're not meant to find out who this mysterious person is yet. And I guess that this is a fourth person in addition to the third person that they find afterwards. As Eyepatch Dude... is like, you'll never find him. And it's like, he's right there!
I see him! Wait, no, I smelled him!
He just, like, smashes through this hill of corpses.
I want the spatial magic dude to be like, lame! As he's teleporting away.
He sinks into this little portable hole that opens up above him as he's flying through the air, reappears on the roof of a building, and he's like, I figured if I disguised myself with magic, then magic would find me out. So I went to the trouble of wearing this filthy disguise, and yet, you're like a wild animal, boy. And he pulls off this fake corpse face and reveals he's got these weird markings going up his face through his eyes. And he's like, but it's over now. And then he just disappears completely. And then... out dumps Faelion's body, and his entire right arm has been blown off. Blood is leaking out of the wound everywhere. He seems dead.
Well, it definitely... This is the first time we've seen decapitation of any kind in this series, right? Dismemberment.
Yeah.
We haven't seen... This isn't like Toriko, where it's like, oh, okay, no, there's curing water now. People can just lose arms and it's fine. Maybe there is a healing magic that can grow arms back, but this does seem like a fatal-ish wound. The thing, though, that puts more suggestion in the fact that it's going to kill him is because he seemed to recognize whoever was in that white room.
Right.
And I have to assume that person wouldn't want his identity discovered.
Well, and also, their goal specifically was to kill him.
Yeah, because at first I was like, why was your whole mission to kill this guy? And I was like, well, to be fair, he was the only captain of any of the Magic Knights at this celebration.
And he's also part of a royal family.
Yeah, so taking him out actually is a pretty, pretty big blow to them.
Now, I understand, you know, the importance of we need additional motivation for a character. So, you know, we've got... You know, Lion's older brother has seemingly been killed, and this mentor figure who just appeared before Asta and Noel has also been killed. That said, you just killed off the only good character in your series.
Noelle's not bad. I still like her.
She's not bad, but she's not very good yet. And, you know, we've got fucking Asta and Yuno and Cheap Glutton Girl. Charmy, that's her name. Just, like, a whole bunch of nothing, really, aside from this one guy who was admirable and interesting. And, yeah, Noelle is good, but she has, you know, some room to grow before I actually like her, you know? So I don't know. This doesn't. I don't know if this is a good move. You know.
Well, here's the thing. I'm going to say that I overall like this direction. I'm with you that I'm not happy that they are killing off the only character I seem to be able to get behind completely. But in the same way, I'm going to trust that this means that the writer's capable of creating characters like this going forward, and that doing this, having a character die, seemingly, that we care about, will put some more stakes into things and at least give me more emotional conviction going forward. I think I'm going to be able to invest more in Asta the next time he fights somebody related to this group, because he's like, you killed my friend, my rival, as opposed to him just being like, oh, I'm going to be Wizard King because none of you guys look down to me. Hold on, I'm going to just nullify all your shit. And it's like, yeah. This puts some motivation, this puts some stakes in it that I could personally care about, I guess. How long that'll last, how much good faith it can, you know, win, I don't know, but I'll choose to be optimistic on this.
Right, I'm just saying, it strikes me as a risky move. It could pay dividends by, you know, oh, you know, I killed off a character that the audience likes, and therefore they will want, you know, justice, or something like that. With that said, you need another character to actually be good that we can follow from this point on. So the real test comes from here, and we'll see how well this turns out.
Yeah.
Now, let's move on to Bleach.
I believe you mean Bleach, Nick.
I hate you. 645. Don't chase a shadow. AKA, we knew all of this already. Why did you spend a chapter on it? I don't even want to talk about this.
Don't chase your shadow, though, Nick. And now it's fast enough to keep up with them. She's not going to do anything.
Just because. And, yeah, she's like, oh, good job keeping up with me, Nanao. But go back and tell the others to go on ahead of us. Okay. I'll tell them and then come back again.
If you die, I'm going to shave off your chest.
Yeah.
All right. What a weird threat. He apparently takes it. He's like, oh, without that, I'll be unidentifiable. I'll be like, you also have the eye patch.
Now you've got an eye patch and straw hat and flowery robe.
Stupid beard.
That is such a weird beard because it looks like it's 5 o'clock shadow, but he clearly maintains it around his mouth and stuff. So it's actually groomed.
Yeah.
This guy is like 1,000 years old. How does he not have filled in facial hair?
You know,
he looks like you know, trying to grow in his first beard in high school. You know, that is the same consistency.
Maybe he died when he was in high school, and his beard won't grow back in. But he himself physically gets older. Look, I don't know how ghosts and Bleach work. I really don't.
So, Shinsui has this whole thing going on. He's gonna fight Liliabaro. You know, the sniper cowboy hat guy with the X-axis sniper rifle. And he explains, you know, I used basically this one game that's like the Japanese version of Red Light, Green Light. And I snuck up to you and there was an illusion and stuff. And Liliabaro was like, we know what your power is. It's the power to make children's games reality. And I can perceive your spirit pressure really easily. And Shinsui's like, oh, but I used your super sensitivity to it in order to instead create an illusion that you were distracted by.
Yeah, I kind of lost what the exact, like, interaction between them became. Like, what was an illusion and what wasn't. It's like, I got the red light, green light thing. Everything else, though, I'm just lost on. Like, there was a shadow that he struck him with.
And there's an after image, and you're not supposed to step on a shadow or else I kill you. And then you shot me, but that was actually my after image shadow. The scary thing about children's games is that you have no idea when or what game's about to start. No matter how uninterested you are, once they take you by the hand, it's all over. You're stuck playing it until death. Or you just kick them in the face because they're a little kid and you don't play their stupid bullshit games.
Yeah.
Nick, hater of children.
Also, wasn't it the power of the X-axis that essentially if he shot a bullet, it wouldn't miss? Like, that was just the power. So why isn't he just rapid firing going crazy right now? I mean, yes, he has a sniper rifle. I assume not the fastest of weapons. I feel like he should really just be firing all every chance he got, though.
And we've seen him fire multiple times, and, like, this Reishi was drawn into that one cage that they were put into way back when. So his power is actually, like, able to... He can fire multiple times quickly. It is possible to counter it, but Junsu's like, oh, you were just shooting an illusion, so that's why he didn't hit me. And then he's explained this to him, and Lulebaro's immediate reaction is not to spin around and shoot the guy who's talking to him.
Yeah. It seems like this is a character who should be doing better than he is.
And it seems like Shunsui should have been killing him already instead of explaining his powers, but it's like, no, that's not the way that the stuff in manga is done. We have to, you know, strike cool poses and fool each other into thinking that we've been killed and say awesome lines back and forth while explaining our powers instead of just fighting like soldiers in an army would.
It's almost like a meta commentary on like, I have to show you my ability. Get to the chapter end. You'll do something to turn around, but don't worry. I still got a Bankai to show off, so we'll get to that first. So you'll survive this, but we can't kill each other until I get that Bankai out.
And just using these four characters, you know, the four super generals or whatever, that are not actually very interesting. Like, even Asuka Naklavar, just like, whatever.
I mean, this character is a cool design. I mean, stupid, but I kind of dig it. It's just, these fights aren't particularly interesting because we generally know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. In the sense of, if this wasn't Shunsui, I think this would be a more interesting fight, but I know they're not going to kill Shunsui off in something like this.
Right.
You know, so the stakes are a little bit lower, and we know he still has his Bankai to show off, so it's like, if this was like Hitsugaya, I think I could be more interested in this fight, because it's like, oh, you know, what are they going to do? Hitsugaya, you know, we've already seen everything he potentially has to throw out there, you know, what could they do with him going forward? Maybe something crazy will happen. This, it's just like, this is a fight to show off what Shunsui's Bankai is before the series ends, and, you know, we have another general to kill.
Right. There's two more generals, aside from this guy, who Shunsui is presumably going to kill and defeat. There is Asuka Naklavar, and there is
Thor,
dude.
Grard or Garrett, something like
right.
that.
Right. So, maybe Grimmjow will somehow defeat Asuka Naklavar, maybe not. And aside from him, there are the other two captains. There's Hitsugaya, and there's Hirako. So, I don't know, do you have predictions on the next fight that happens after this?
If it's between those two, I'm going to say Hitsugaya gets to fight Gerard, or whatever his name is. That just seems like a fight that's kind of easy to set up between them.
Okay.
Although, it's possible maybe they save Hitsugaya for fucking the balance dude. Maybe show him up there. That seems like a...
I just came back level. From the dead for this guy to kill me.
Yeah.
I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, we shall see.
All right.
Moving along to Scary Tale.
Okay, that's better.
Chapter 455, Defending Magnolia. And the cover page is cover to Wizard Magazine.
I like that for once there was like an excuse for this super slutty picture. It was like, Urza just felt like posing for a magazine for some time.
Yeah, for some reason in this world, one of the most popular magazines is just this one where female mages get naked. It's a thing they do. All right, stop. Let's not question it. So the chapter opens with Urza on the ship staring down a Geel, and the, I forget what their team name was, Dragon Force or whatever, is basically like, well, we're fucked, so let's fly back. I mean, it's not the far... One of Natsu's power-ups was called Dragon Force.
Yeah.
So, basically the Dragon Slayers are like, well, we'll have to kind of let her handle this because we can't do anything here. So, we cut back to the guild, and Makarov explains, like, oh, nearly impossible for one person to defeat a member of the Spriggan 12 alone, even for Urza! They're like, well, just gonna have to trust her. We kind of jump around to a couple different areas. We see that Siegfried's like, yeah, you know, my magic's good, but, you know, they're hitting it with too much magical power, so I don't know how I'm gonna be able to hold on, though, because their forces are cut down severely, I might be able to do it. And then we see the cowboy sniper girl, and she's just I don't know why you bothered to remember her name. You can say it's Bisca. I refuse to care about it. She's a fucking unimportant character that they're just doing in here because they're like, shit, we need a sniper.
Cowboy mother.
Yes, cowboy girl. She says, I'm going to snipe things more. Anyway, we see two other members of Ajeel's group, Kareem and Bakel. And Bakel, I think, has a sneezing gimmick. I don't know. He sneezes in his introduction, which seems weird to me. Like, it's not very...
He's like, achoo!
Like, I don't know if they just, like, accidentally panned to him too early or something like that. It'd be like if you were in an NFL team and they're doing, like, that intro, like, you know, like, Sean Lee, Penn State. Like, they got to you and you're just like, Jeff Galtz. Oh, can we do that again? And just moves to the next guy. Like, they didn't bother getting a retake.
Lamar's Javar.
Natsu and the Dragon Slayers show up and they start beating a whole bunch of those guys up. We see Bakel trying to do something, but we cut away. Urza's fighting Ajeel. Ajeel's basically like, wow, you are not that good. And, you know, there's stronger members than you because you're a real letdown so far. And she tries to fight back. He basically, you know, creates like a whirlwind of sound around her and uses the line again of crumble into desert dust. Why doesn't he just say sand? I don't understand what is desert dust. It's a weird phrase.
Sad. I don't understand what sand... No, sand is what you find on a beach, not a desert!
They're different! But Urza notes that she can't re-equip like she's supposed to, so something's clearly going on. And we then cut to Siegfried, who's like, uh-oh, someone just broke through my barrier. And Mavis notes like, oh, is there a magic canceller among the enemy? And we see Wall-sama. Why did I say Sama? That's what they call him. Wall. He has apparently snuck into the city. I guess he's maybe the magic counseling guy. So he's just walked right in and he's heading towards it. And Makron's like, what the...
He's a very interesting looking guy. He looks like if Kurita got some ridiculous fashion sense.
In that way, yes. Very much so. But I like... It's not dumb enough that I hate it, though.
Oh, he doesn't look stupid. He actually looks kind of intimidating. It's a unique design. I like it.
And Makro's like, well, that means there's another member of the Spriggan 12 here. We'll have to, you know, so we have to go, like, intercept him. So members of Fairy Tail are kind of hanging out there. For some reason, Elfman has, like, a 19-pack. I don't know where that came from.
He is fucking huge. What happened to this man?
I have to assume he's just been doing massive magical steroids or something.
Maybe he's already transforming into his, like, fighting form.
Yeah, maybe. Or he just has 18 abs now. I don't know. One of the two. We cut away to Lucy at her place, and she grabs Aquarius's broken key.
This is such
key.
A weird scene.
Yeah, this is. She grabs Aquarius's broken key, and she makes, like, a quick prayer, like, you know, Aquarius, give me strength, which is, like, a very sweet sentiment, kind of like a little reminder before she goes out into battle. And then she hears something in her house... Goes into the bathroom.
Oh, God. As soon as this happens, and I'm like, huh. And then she says, it's over in the bath. Oh, no.
And apparently, Brandish is just in her bathroom, naked, taking a bath. I mean, we also see the little weird guy is super shrunk down, saying, you pass. So, I'm of the assumption maybe she used her shrinking powers to shrink herself, go in through the sewer line and just came up underneath her bath and then for whatever reason decided to take her clothes off, turn on the bath, sit in it and soak for a while. I don't know.
I felt like taking a bath. Whatever.
Yeah. I don't get this reasoning. You gave the two male members of this group big dramatic openings where they're coming in with invading forces. She's in a fucking bath. Come on.
Hero, like, after Brandish was... introduced into the series. He, like, went online, went on the fucking hentai forums and stuff. Didn't see enough artwork and was like, okay, fine. More sexual stuff for you guys. Now draw more stupid fan art. Which is basically just, like, I don't know why, because I do it myself.
And yeah, I was like, what does he need them for? He does it every week.
And I'm better artist than those guys. What am I talking about? Why aren't I just drawing porn? Seriously.
Let me end this series real quick, and I can just start doing porn all the time. Magical porn.
Oh, that's how many zeros are on my paycheck for Fairy Tail.
Okay. All right, fine. Just four more spinoff series. Then I'm done. So they all know, like, holy crap, that means three members of the Spriggan 12 are here. And then they're like, oh no, another group is coming from up north, and they have three members of the Spriggan 12 there too. Oh, and holy shit, a group's coming in from the south, and they have another three of the Spriggan 12. And then they realize, they're like, oh no, and there's another one coming from the east that has three more. We're surrounded in all four directions.
The guy says that there are a million people coming. A million!
A million people coming.
Do you know how many people there are in a million? How do you march an army of a million people? It's just like the entire city is floating towards them or some shit. That is so fucking ridiculous.
And everyone's like, what? How could they possibly be attacking us from all sides? This is the worst outcome. And we see Mavis even looking very, very distraught. She says, I've considered every potential strategy, but I don't see any way to win. You know, we didn't expect them to attack from all four sides. And I call so much bullshit on that. Mavis, I feel like at this point, she's really fighting Yamamoto for being the worst military commander in manga. Because she is just making horrific mistake after horrific mistake in this. This is like the worst strategy in a war I've seen. And it's sad because you really don't need to, like, there's a quick twist you could just do for this that would make this not sound so incompetent. Like, if you just said, I just really didn't grasp how huge their numbers were, as opposed to, like, I never considered that they'd attack us from all four sides, even though they have the military strength and the sheer quantity size to do so. And we all stayed in the same place. We didn't try guerrilla warfare tactics or anything. We sat in our house.
I think even if you just says, like, I never thought that they would actually send this much of our force towards us all at once right at the beginning, that'd be something else. But yeah, I can't believe that they surrounded us. Unexpected.
Or if you said, like, I can't believe they sent all 12. Because, you know, you could say, like, there's maybe some precedence that...
I don't think they say that they sent all 12.
No, they said all 12. Because they say three... There's an attack coming from each direction, and all directions have three members of the Spriggan 12 on
them. No, they say... Let's see. There's a massive fleet from the north. They've got another three. They say there's another fleet coming from the south with another three. Squeezing in from three sides with the three additionally there, and then there's another force of a million people from the east. So
three more, and he says after that, three more Spriggan 12.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so there's three already in the town, so all 12 are presumably accounted for in that.
I thought he was saying that that nine members were there, and there were also a million people coming in. So it seems as though, well, even if he was just saying, like, nine members of the Spriggan 12 are there, that's still kind of, we're fucked, too.
Yeah.
So.
But it's just like, Let's step back. Let's review what Mavis's strategy for this war was. War has been declared.
Yes.
She stays in her base and says, we're going to fortify it. We are going to... Now, the logic they follow is that one member of the Spriggan 12 cannot be taken down by one person individually. They're just too strong. Fairy Tail would have to unite forces. Their plan is to send the Dragon Slayers up into the air against the airships, hilariously forgetting the fact that Dragon Slayers are worthless on moving vehicles, and then just have everyone else in Fairy Tail kind of staring around town. Like, that was their plan. Like, unless Mavis reveals some crazy backup here, like, oh no, you walked into my trap, the fucking Towns of Venus flytrap, and just snapped up, like, half your forces or something crazy. Like, you're like, you fucking worthless leader. You did nothing. Like, who goes into a war where you're massively outscaled and isn't like, maybe we shouldn't hang out in our base that has our fucking name imprinted on the front of it. Maybe we should go somewhere else. Maybe we, guerrilla tactics, use our environment to our advantage. I don't... Next chapter will kind of have to signify a lot. I just found it very amusing. It's like, this is the lamest strategy someone has ever come up with. Who would not consider the attack from all four sides?
I don't know.
Maybe they'll be like, maybe next chapter they'll be like, oh no, to the east there's like a bottomless pit that somehow is also full of acid. And I was like, oh well, that's why no one expected something to come from the east, the acid pit.
Maybe it'll turn out that this was all like a magical simulation, or they had actually built a fake Magnolia, like in Blazing Saddles, that was actually invaded.
That would be great. Oh, fucking fake Karakura Town, Nick. They get in there and they're like, that was a magic city we created. We're all in fucking Elseworld fairy tale building, whatever. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, like when they, yeah, and so they meet. Then you could meet, like, I don't know, fucking anti-froze.
Yeah. Who I assume is just like an 80-foot dragon who only states his opinions and refuses to accept anyone else's.
I think that you should let us go, Frost disagrees!
Frost thinks different!
Oh, God.
So, yeah, that's Fairy Tale this week.
Yes, let's move on now. Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma,
chapter 100. Don't you mean Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma?
That's the third time in four that you've used the boo joke.
Booed. Oh, Shokugeki no Soma.
I'm going to boo you. Chapter 137, A Flame of Hope. Last time, Sensei-mon explained the whole situation with Irina and Izami to Soma and asked him to save his Sensei-mon's granddaughter. We then cut to Irina, basically going through lessons with Izami, and when she refuses to throw food away, he says, ah, well then I don't need a child like you, and she ends up in a wastebasket! What a horrible nightmare that was. Because it was a nightmare.
Who goes to sleep with all their clothes on, though? And no cover? For shame.
I don't know. But, I mean, that's a pretty heavy trauma right there. You know, she was taught, you know, this is her father's philosophy where, you know, things that are not useful or that he does not approve of must be discarded. So she is afraid of being discarded by him. And that's really why she can't come out from under his thumb and stuff.
It is a good little, what's the word I'm looking for?
Image.
Yeah, good way to express it. There's a much smarter way to phrase that sentence and I lost all the words. I was trying to think of a scarier way of Food Wars.
Metaphor.
Good little metaphor. Yeah, we'll go with that.
Serena wakes up and she remembers basically, I guess, the past day or a couple of days events. The last Council of Ten meeting that she attended. They basically finished stuff up and then they Rindo observed Hakuga boycotting another meeting. Which seems to imply that he disagrees so heavily with Izami being the new headmaster that he's actually just not attending meetings anymore.
So. We see Ishiki's there, so clearly, even though he didn't agree to do it, he's still showing up.
Yeah. No word on, his name escapes me, Giant Hack Guy, either. So. Let's see. Irina suddenly gets summoned by Izami then, her father is practicing swordsmanship, all traditional Japanese-like and stuff. And he tells her, you know, you're going to continue your tasting duties in the afternoon. I will be joining you. Make certain you are prepared, and so on and so forth. And she says, all right, yeah, and I have to go. I have class in the morning. Oh, you don't have to go to that class. Well, what do you mean? It is Professor Suzuki's Western Confectionery Practicum Part B, correct? I looked over the course syllabus, and it is an utter waste of time. It seems even the quality of teaching here has fallen. With your skills, you can easily pass all the tests without even bothering to attend class. Your time is limited, my daughter. We must make efficient use of it. And Harry thinks to herself, but that class is one that I have with Hisako. Aww. Yeah. But she doesn't say a single thing. He says, all right. And she obeys him and, so she's just stuck in her room all miserable now as Ami's right back to controlling her life. And Sensei-mon at the same time tells Soma that he's sure that Izami will use the same techniques that he used a decade ago and create an environment in which he is the only person on whom she can rely. I will never forget how he intercepted Alice's letters to Irina from Europe and shredded every single one. At this rate, Irina will once again be closeted away in an empty, lonely world without a single person to speak to. But, at that moment, Alice shows up at Irina's window, as she and Kurikiba have gotten a ladder and climbed up on the balcony and stuff. And Alice says, come on, we're going to bust you out of here. And they...
Her exact quote is, God, like, what are you dithering around for?
Like, come on, we're busting you out of the mansion.
My God, what are you dithering around for?
I get
Who the, says dithering? It's such an awesome word. It's not nearly used enough.
I get the impression that there must be someone within Viz who is specifically making these regional choices. Because later on, we see something that seems very out of character, too. Anyhow, Hisako is also with Kurokiba and Alice, and so the three of them are kind of working together. And I think, actually, that Ariana seeing Hisako might be what convinces her to go along with them. Because, you know, best friends and stuff. And Alice explains that, you know, she saw Hisako as, or as she calls her, secretary girl, shuffling around like a zombie. So she asked what was wrong, and then after hearing what happened, she decided that they needed to help her out. And Alice says to her, you know, I wrote, like, a bajillion letters, but you never wrote back even once. And Ariana tries to explain, but Alice says, no, I know. And that's why you're running away from home. That's what the teens of the world do in this sort of situation, you know? Is it?
Yeah, they're always running around. I'm running away, Nick.
All teenagers just run away in situations where they're abused, but I don't know. I kind of wish that were the case, honestly.
Do I need to call the police for you, Nick?
No. I'm just saying that there are some kids out there in abusive home situations who don't decide to escape from them.
I think she's speaking more of the world of television, where every time some kid in television doesn't like a situation, they run away from home.
Yeah. And Arina's like, you know, I can't defy father. And Alice is saying, you have to have a backbone, and so on and so forth. And Kurokiba points out rightfully, well, where is she going to go, though? And
it's like his only line in this entire event, and he's the one who's just like, where is she going to go?
His only lines are basically like, where is she going to go, related, essentially.
Yeah.
And so he's like, so Alice says, you can stay at the Arato Manor. And Hisako's like, no, people from the Nikiri Mansion come there all the time. And Kurokiba says, and both mine and Miss Alice's are in the Nikiri Mansion too. And Alice's like, God, isn't there anyone who can keep her? And Hisako says, she's not a stray pet. But, she's like, oh, she could stay in a local abandoned lot. So I think you're right. Yeah, I think she's only informed by, like, fucking...
Yeah, she just watches a lot of fucking, like, teen dramas.
It's just like, she's a runaway, and runaways can't be fussy. Well, would you be okay with staying in an abandoned lot? Ugh, like, never! No way I'm staying anywhere I can't get a bath! She means well, I know. Kurokiba is like the only logical person in this whole thing. She's like, well, she could rent a hotel room somewhere. And I was like, Ariana could never manage to live in a hotel room by herself. And Yasako says, well, I could stay with her. But
I want to note, how dumb is this girl? How dumb do they think she is? So she can't be in a room by herself without something going wrong. Like, she can't get a hotel room. Why?
She never managed to get by in a hotel room where she would have every demand catered to her. But Kurokiba was just pointing out kind of logical, you know, things like, well, Hisako, you know, if you and Ariana go missing at the same time, people are going to suspect what's happened. So, that kind of ignores, if Ariana goes missing, the people will suspect what happened. But it starts raining, and Ariana is just like, I'm just going to go back to the mansion. Don't bother with me anymore. You're just going to get yourselves in trouble. And at that moment, suddenly Megumi appears before them. But we cut away from that scene to back to someone saying Zenmon. And someone says, you know, you should probably head back home, before giving his reply to Senzaemon. And he says, I get that Ariana went through some crap with her father in the past, but that doesn't change a thing. I've known what I'm going to do from the start. See, she called my food disgusting. I haven't gotten her back for that yet. Sure, she may be going through some tough stuff at home, but that doesn't have anything to do with me. No matter what's going on, I won't be happy until I get her to say my food's good. So, It's a really kind of weird moment where he basically says, I'm not helping her out, but I'm going to help her out.
Yeah. It's very much like I'm the shonen protagonist who has my own way of doing things. Yeah. But the way it comes across, like, it's like, eh, I don't really care about her problems. But by solving my problem, I'm going to unintentionally solve hers.
You can tell that he's specifically doing this to assure Senzaemon to help him out. Mm-hmm. You know, now that he knows about this, yeah, he's going to help out Erina, but it's like, I'm doing it for my own reasons. So it's like, well, yeah, but you're also doing it because he told you to help him. So, yeah. And Senzaemon thinks to himself, ah, you were correct, Juichiro. If there is anyone who can save Erina, it will be him and all the other children from Erina's class. And that's an interesting line that he has about Juichiro is, you know, did Juichiro know specifically that Soma would get involved with Erina? Which, I mean, without, that would mean, oh, he does remember Erina and care about her and stuff. So
I also like that it notes, like, oh, hey, it won't just be Soma helping him out. Because as we saw from this chapter, he's clearly not the only one invested in her. But also, like, Juichiro also maybe mentioned, like, yeah, Soma and his group of friends, you know, maybe he knows as well as everybody else. Like, yeah, no, there's good kids in that class, a lot of talented kids. And more than just one person's going to go out of their way to help her.
Yeah. So Megumi basically is out and she says, what are you guys doing out here? She says, I actually came out. I heard your voices from inside the dorm, so I came out to see who it was. Anyway, y'all are going to catch your death out here.
She's a down-home country girl, Nick. What do you want?
No, she isn't. I can't. I know nothing about cooking no food, Mr. Yukihira. Will y'all show me so I don't fail this here Citifo class?
Well, golly, Wilkers, thanks for teaching me how to make that there salad.
I don't know where the fuck this line came from. Because she says specifically when she first comes out, oh my gosh, what are you all doing out here in these woods? And then y'all are going to catch your death out here.
It's just like, at one moment she's like, I'm a teenage girl with a little bit of a rural upbringing. And then next she's Gomer Pyle, like, y'all gonna catch your death out here, Sarge!
I swear to God, she better not have any more of this goddamn gumption fucking Forrest Gump, I'm from Lilo Place in Alabama lines no more. Cause God, it so does not fit her at all. I'm so used to, like, hearing her voice in a certain way, and that is not super Southern Belle. Like, even the next, like, half of the word bubble doesn't match that same structure in syntax. It bugs me so bad. Anyhow, Megumi basically says, coming from the rain, Polaris is right this way. Which seems to heavily imply, you know, obviously she doesn't know the whole situation. She's just saying, you know, come in from the rain, you know, for the time being. But that seems to imply that this is going to be where Erina is staying from now on. Or at least, you know, for a significant amount.
And perhaps that means Polaris Guild gets targeted first. And my prediction comes true. Go-goosh. Which,
yeah, so there you go. So yeah, honestly, like, I like the sudden development in this chapter where it's nice that the manga remembers that, yeah, Soma and Erina have this weird relationship, but she has, you know, she has Alice, she has Hisako, she had that, you know, whole thing where she went on the stagiaire and went to that one restaurant along with Megumi. She has all these different people that do have ties to her, and it's not just going to be Soma swooping in to save the day. It makes it a whole lot less of a damsel in distress type of situation, and a whole lot more of our friend is in trouble, and we're going to help her.
Yes. And that's where I like it best, when it's like, yeah, this entire school's going to, or this entire class, at least, is going to get behind trying to help her. At least a lot of them.
The whole point of, you know, Senzaemon saying, oh, you know, she needs help, it was not her father's abusing her, but her father is the only one who has any influence over her, and that's not healthy. And, you know, having other people around her helped to break that shell. And so them staying in her lives is going to help her with the situation. Mm. good chapter. Not an not an incredible bombshell, really. But it's like, oh, she's gonna stay in Polaris's. Eh, whatever. And someone's gonna help her out. Well, yeah, I kind of knew that already. But just kind of a nice, you know, theme of nice moment of her friends came to help her. Like, immediately. There was no pussyfooting around or anything like that. It was just, like, the first night after she and Hisako were separated, we gotta go do something, and they bust her out.
Yes. A very, very good chapter.
All right, let's move on now to My Hero Academia. Academia.
Or do you mean My Hero Academia?
What the fuck? Fuck you. You could have said My Hero Academia. Fucking lazy piece of shit.
Don't you tell me what to do.
Oh, fucking hell. Number 61, the worst combo. Like Chris and Pun! So last time we found out that the practical examination that fucking Deku's class is going to have to take part in is they're partnered up, and each of them have to take on a different teacher in the school. And Deku specifically is going to be teaming up with Bakugo. And so we've got 10 sets, of course, because there's 20 kids in the class, 10 teachers sticking on 10 teams of two, and we get a nice big 2-page spread that explains all of the different teams and the opponent that they're going up against. Some of them are quite interesting. I like we actually a fair amount of focus on Asui, Suyu, and Tokayami going up against this ectoplasm guy whom we've seen before, but not incredibly prominently. Ida is going to be teaming up with Ojiro, the tail guy, and Uraraka is teaming up with Aoyama, who I believe is the belly button laser guy.
Yes. So, and I guess Tetsu isn't in this class because he doesn't.
I think he is. He was teamed up in the last chapter. Wasn't he? No, he's not. You're right.
Yeah, he's not in here. I think Tetsu's in the other class. I think Kirishima's the guy who has a power very similar to his, though. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Anyhow. Yeah. So, they then have to get on a bus. Like, individual buses. The team and the teacher are all head off to different locations. And so Alma is like, hey, guys, you want to play a word game to pass the time? And you're just like... just an awkward silence as Bakugo is sitting as far away from both of them as possible. You can barely see him because he's all the way in the back. And I like the conversation that we get where they are explaining... Aizawa was explaining his logic behind not only the teams, but also who they're matched up against. So, you know, he's like, we've got Ashido and Kaminari, and they're both very single-bind action-oriented, so principle, you should use your intelligence against them. And Todoroki, he's an exceptional fighter, but he doesn't like to unleash his power in single attacks, and Yayarosu is a genius, but she falters when deciding and acting in the moment, so I'll use my power to erase their quirks and exploit their weaknesses. And then he's just like, and then Midori and Bakugo, I'm leaving them to you, All Might. It has nothing to do with how their grades work or their abilities or their personalities. It's just that they don't like each other. And that's the only reason.
Yeah, it just like notes very bluntly, like, they hate each other. They are the worst combo.
And you're a fan of Midori, so you guide him as you see fit. I like that they put a lot of thoughts into who they matched up and who they matched them up against and so on and so
forth. Yeah, there were strategies presumably behind all these pairings. And it almost seems like we might get a little bit of a glimpse of just about all of them.
Mm-hmm. And I think the whole point of this is, you know, of this, not only this, and also showing the rankings and how that well they performed and stuff, this was a chance to bring some of the front runners kind of back to earth, and also to give the lower class ones a chance to shine by showing this one aspect of their capabilities as heroes that doesn't come out in the other tests. You know, stuff that doesn't come out in straight one-on-one combat and so on and so forth, where Deku and Bakugo got to shine.
Mm. Because we find out there's a second condition to the way you can win this.
Right. There are two options that they have. Each of them can choose to defeat their teacher, and specifically by getting handcuffs on them, or they can escape from the stage, and each of them have a different facility that they go into, presumably with a very different set of obstacles to work with. And also, All Might is, like, wearing these bracers on his ankles and wrists to weigh him down, very Dragon Ball type of thing, to help limit his power and drain his stamina and stuff, so that they'll actually have a chance to defeat him. And he actually mentions the Hatsume girl, the one that Ida went up against in the one-on-one tournament, and she won a contest to get to design them and stuff. Mm-hmm. Interesting that she seems to just she's going to be getting this kind of role as a recurring Q sort of character.
Oh, that'd be so awesome if she did become like their Q and she starts talking with a British accent.
And a lot of the different teachers are giving lectures to the students. They say, it's like, oh, you know, think of us as actual villains, because, you know, if we were to meet in battle, if you fight and win, that's great, but if you're overwhelmed by us, then fleeing and calling for help might be your wisest option. And Aizawa points to Todoroki and says, you of all people should understand that, and the other two as well. You know, you got into a situation where you really should have tried to get away and call for help, basically. A lot of the students are able to understand this is either a fight to win or a run to win scenario. And Bakugo is just like, oh, are you going to try and insult us by, you know, saying you're bringing yourself down to our level to fight, and so on and so forth. It's obvious he's not going to try and run away from the very get-go. Mm. But then the team and the teacher each go to different locations within the facility. And so we start actually with Tokoyami and Suyu, who are conversing over what they should do, and they basically immediately conclude we should try and get away. And so they're like, okay, we're in the center of the stage, we've got to get out. Sensei is probably waiting to ambush us near the gate, and so on and so forth, strategizing even before the match actually begins, which is something that I think we're deliberately told, because I guess they're the exception to this, because their communication abilities are emphasized. But as soon as the ground starts, ectoplasm like surges up from the ground and so on and so forth. And the teachers are indicating, oh, we're not going to hold back. Todoroki is taking control of the situation with Yayorozu. And he's like, okay, if Aizawa is nearby, then his power negation will probably immediately kick in. So keep on making small objects, just little things to let you know that your power is working. And he's just taking complete control of the situation while she doesn't really say anything. And then as Suyu and Tokoyama are being surrounded, they immediately spring to action. Tokoyama's like, I'm gonna throw you, Suyu, and he uses a shout to throw her up in the air, and she calls out to him and uses her tongue to pull him up to her level as well so that they can start to escape and so on and so forth. So,
cool strategy between them.
Yeah, and they just a few quick lines, like, oh, I'm gonna do this, you know, heads up, and they do that, and so Healer girl, whose name I forget, actually.
Isn't that like nurse girl or something like that?
It's not that. It's something else. It's something along those lines, though. Anyway, she says, oh yeah, you know, communication skills, they're, you know, an overlooked yet essential quality for heroes. It's not about having good teamwork with one's trusted sidekick, but rather being able to work well with anyone to a certain degree. Which means for these two, of course, we get to Bakugo and Deku. Bakugo's like, we've got to fight him! And Deku's like, we should avoid him. No! We'll let him toy with us until the very end, and then when he's exhausted, I'll let him have it! And Deku's like, you're always yelling! You've gotta listen to what I say! Shut up!
I want to, like, find it more funny, but this is actually, like, kind of an intimidating chapter. Like,
he's really fucking laying into him. He's like, he punches Deku across the face, like, backhands him, too. Because, you know, Deku says there's no way we can win. He just smacks him across the face and says, oh, you think you're all that? It's pissing me off. And Deku's getting frustrated. He's like, you're just always yelling. We can never actually talk with each other. And, of course, they're noted as being the worst possible combo because they just don't get along at all. As some of the explosion blasts through the landscape that they're on, as All Might has just punched something somewhere. And he's like, ready or not, here I come. So it's a very interesting setup. And once again, My Hero Academia doing stuff that just makes the combat and the situations that and the tests that they have to go through so interesting.
It's interesting to me because it's been a while since I remembered that Bakugo was really this big of a shithead. Mm-hmm. Like, early on in the series, he was just a complete asshole. He almost let Deku die at one point. And then we got...
when we first picked up the series when it came into English Jump, it was within the tournament, and so...
And he had the fight with Uraraka, where he respected her, and then basically after that, it was just like, here he is brushing his teeth angrily at the end. You're like, oh, that, his anger's just silly and funny, like a goofy thing. And I was like, oh, right, he is a tremendous asshole at points. Like, it's almost like you're watching an abusive relationship.
In a way, yeah. And, you know, keep in mind that this... Part of this springs from the fact that Deku saved his life. Mm. Like, seriously.
Like, that's the grudge he holds, because he just feels so emasculated. Mm-hmm. But, in that regard, though, this entire premise is incredibly intriguing to me, because there's so much potential development amongst the entire cast. I mean, we have small bits here and there, like, you know, just what the teacher says to Todoroki and Ida, like, you know, some people should choose to flee if the fight gets bad. I know a couple of you already are aware of that. Like, this is a way to kind of tell some stories with those characters, give them a little bit of depth. But clearly the big story here is, like, what's going to happen with Deku and Bakugo. Now, it doesn't seem Ida, after all, is going to be the character that, like, turns to become that anti-hero or something like that. But they've noted time and time before that Bakugo is very close to becoming a villain at points. Like, he's not really a heroic character, per se.
So he just wants to be strong, basically.
It'd be interesting to see if this becomes the catalyst for that. Like, if this changes him staying with the academy.
Is he going to become a vigilante, or is he actually going to kind of turn a corner and start becoming a better person? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, good stuff, and I'm very interested to see where it goes. One Piece.
I believe you mean Bone Piece, Nick.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Chapter 8.
I gotcha.
Zo. We go to Bartolomeo's ship, where everyone's hanging out. They have come across gigantic hail. Hail the size of your head is raining down on them. How terrifying. Jesus. They're trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. And Luffy says, which way are we going? Who is the... Or Franky, I think, actually says, where are we going? Who's the navigator? And so on.
Yeah, because he's the helmsman of the crew.
Right.
Unofficially. So he's like, you know, I need directions. Where are we going? Like, you know, we need a navigator.
And Bartolomeo says, oh, we don't have a navigator. Because, you know, we were all landlubber gangsters. And he then points over his shoulder to this guy who is on a Denmushi. Who's called up his grandma. He's like, oh, it's me, Gambia. Listen, there's huge hail falling here. He's like, see, he always calls his grandma back home when there's trouble. That's the person they go to for advice.
Well, I love it because it's like, oh, good. Well, you do know somebody. Well, hurry up. And he's just like, hey, guys, know there's gum stuck to the deck? Well, grab one of those hails, put in the cloth, and close to the gum. The guy's like, oh, it just came right off. We don't need that fucking kind of help right now.
And
he immediately gets hit by hail.
Which should kill him, because it's the size of his head. It hits him in the back of the head. And, oh no, he got hit in the back of the head! She says to rub the lump with sugar. Ah, enough with the folk wisdom!
Luffy's just calling out for Nami to save
Nami
him.
Nami, save us!
I love this kid. Like, they fucking call his grandma for help, and she just gives them fucking, like, urban medicine advice. She gives them they call her for life hacks, essentially.
And Zoro's like, hey, maybe you should put up a barrier around the ship. Oh, but Grandma always said, don't fight against nature or you'll pay the price.
I fucking love Bartolomeo, man.
But it's okay, with the Straw Hat Craw, Bar, we've got the strength of 1,000. There's no need to fear the gods of nature. And we just kind of get this, like, I guess, little time lapse of them going through various hazards, like going off waterfalls and being attacked by giant fish and so on and so forth, and being completely incompetent on how to handle the situation. Until finally they seem to get out of it as we cut away. Head to Navy headquarters, where Kizaru is having a conversation, asking about how many Whitebeard captives have been defeated as they've gotten word of the AO pirates being defeated by the warlord Edward Weevil. And so he's like, oh, so, you know, it seems that, that was the 16th former Whitebeard captain that was defeated. It seems that they'd gotten into an argument, and then the entire town was blown off the map. We estimate a good 600 casualties. Everywhere he goes, the civilian damage is tremendous. I don't know if we can overlook this, even if he's in the Seven Warlords. The curator says, well, yeah, you know, that's the truth or falsehood of that claim doesn't matter to us. No matter what bloodline he's from, he possesses one very significant source of value to us. As a pirate, he is tremendously powerful, just like the real Whitebeard in his youth, at least in terms of strength. And we cut to this Edward Weevil as he talks like this to himself. They're all dummies. They don't understand. They all say the same thing. They say the only son of Whitebeard was the Whitebeard pirate crew. But mama, I'm the son of Whitebeard. My hair's white.
Now, it's interesting. One, he has an odd look to him that looks like he's been stitched together. Strange. But he also has what looks like Whitebeard's staff.
And he has Whitebeard's facial hair, almost. It's not quite the same because it's not as thick, but it follows that same incredibly upturned curve. It goes well beyond. It's actually way outside of the dimensions of his head than the real Whitebeard's was. And so, yeah, he claims himself to be the son of Whitebeard, nicknamed Whitebeard Jr. And before joining the Seven Warlords, he had a bounty of 480 million berries, which is right around the range that Luffy and Law are at now. So, seemingly quite infamous already. And he is with his mother, who claims to be Whitebeard's former lover, Miss Buckin. And she's just a little old lady who, like, whacks him on the shin with her walking stick whenever she says, whenever her son says something stupid. And they have this weird exchange where she's like, ah, look at this! Is that a mirror? No, it's a picture of Whitebeard! Oh! I thought it was a mirror!
I don't know why. I love that joke so much, though. look at this. Is that a mirror? No, it's a picture of Whitebeard.
I thought it was a mirror!
Like, how much are they gonna go with this joke that he looks like Whitebeard?
He's such a weird, clownish, comical character, but he has just raised the city to the ground and killed everyone in sight. What a weird new character.
It is strange. I'm going to have to grow a little bit on his design. I'm not crazy about the way he looks, but he seems like he could be an interesting character at the very least. Yeah.
And he is vowed revenge on Blackbeard. Who has killed his at least proclaimed father. But also he has a big grudge against the former Whitebeard pirates because, of course, Whitebeard was all about calling his men his sons. And he's like, no, I'm the only real son of Whitebeard. So it's an interesting kind of approach to have to everything. But he's a nice way to establish himself as his own force. He's one of the warlords, but like almost all the warlords, he has his own mission that he's going on and stuff. So we cut away from them to back on the Mr. Luffy Go, where all members of Bartolomeo's crew are getting seasick because they're landlubbers, and despite being a pirate crew, they just don't have sea legs in any way, shape, or form. What a weird crew this is. God. Oh, man. They come across the island Zou, which is not a real island. It's a giant elephant, a giant ancient elephant with seemingly landscape and mountains and buildings on its back because it's so huge. And Law actually explains that because it's not actually land, you can't track it with a log pose. So it's a unique, quote-unquote, landmass. And that's seemingly where Nami and company are located. They see that it's the elephant's actually alive, and it's got these weird, like, eyeless sockets, it looks like. This millennia-old elephant.
It's a creepy, it's almost Toriko-esque, where you're like, ooh, it's like a creepy-looking design. Like, I don't much care for that dude. But, interesting nonetheless. I like this idea. I love, like, when the world of One Piece can, like, play with its own rules a little bit. So it's like, oh, an idea of a moving island. And, you know, it's not something unheard of. You hear all the time about, like, oh, an island that's on a turtle's back or whatever.
Yes, yeah.
But I just like the kind of premise we're going with here. It seems interesting. I feel like this is going to be a relatively short arc, but I'm pretty.
Yeah, we'll see because how this ties into the Big Mom situation. Presumably, is going to be a kind of a short thing to reunite the Straw Hats that might spin into something bigger.
Yes, very much so.
And also, I mean, like Kinemon is still with them and stuff. And Law is still with them. It's a weird kind of, and Bartolomeo is traveling with them and stuff. It's a lot of weird combination of temporary crew members. Also we get a brief explanation that Law has, from Law that says, there's this tribe called the Minx that have been keeping humankind away from their home for nearly 1,000 years. So, yeah. But, okay, I mean, it looks like we're gonna start getting into, okay, let's get the Straw Hats back together and stuff. So. Yeah. And also the weird stuff with the white beard. It was a very kind of, we're back to one of those kind of world-building chapters of One Piece where we don't have a whole ton of stuff to do. We kind of just take a little bit of time in between the major arcs to establish little details about things.
Yeah, it's almost like we're still kind of learning where the world's at this point. So, mm-hmm. But still good.
Okay. Saman the Summoner. Saman's a dick. That's it.
Nick, I believe you mean Saman the Sambooner.
I'll kill you with a knife. The jump start for Saman the Summoner is over. Don't really have anything else to say about it that wasn't said in the last couple of chapters. Yeah. Anyhow, let's move on to Toriko.
I believe you mean Goriko, Nick.
That's better. That's better. Chapter, or rather, Gourmet 341, The Strongest Devour All, a.k.a. Did you forget who the eight kings were? Just want to remind you.
We have so many of them.
We literally had, here are the eight, the members of the eight that you didn't know about before. And, so now we knew about all of them, but this one is just like, oh, this thing that launched out from Acacia, trying to devour everything. Oh, it almost got the Aido monkey before Terry and company saved it. And then Bambina started fighting it, and the creature's like, oh, this thing is for serious. And then it's like, oh, this one found Nightmare Heracles. And this one went after this one, but it quietly disappeared into the back channel, blah, blah, blah. So, oh, these things are super dangerous. Yeah, knew about them already. Oh, look, there's the Serpent King Mother Snake. Well, I was introduced to it 5 chapters ago. There's the Emperor Crow. Yeah, I was introduced to that one 5 chapters ago, too.
It's just such a weird point. In Toriko, we've bounced around to so many different things. And I just have to wonder, like, what the point of any of this is. Is there one? Because we've gone from, it was the kitchen. They were in the kitchen. Yuta killed a man. And we learned all that stuff. Like, they built up this whole logic of, like, oh, and there's different shells you can get. And, you know, there's a whole hierarchy. And it's going to be a 5-on-5 tournament. And then, like, we just suddenly cut away. And we're like, oh, no, now we're with this Acacia pit where crazy things are happening. Holy shit, look, it's Jiro and Setsuno and someone else who I can't remember, Kaka or some bullshit like that. Then we cut away and we're like, no, look, fucking Midoriya is hanging out with Joey and he's in their facility fucking shit up. And we cut away again and it's like, now let's look at all the spawns of Acacia dithering about fucking the gourmet world getting killed by the eight kings. Like, a lot of people are speculating that maybe Toriko has been given, like, the wrap-up. That, like, Toriko just needs to end, and maybe that will explain why everything's just been spontaneous and constantly jumping around. Because even this chapter doesn't end like, oh, well, the next chapter surely will just continue with where we left off. Because at the end, Toriko's like, oh, hey, I got a phone call from Komatsu. Hey, Komatsu, what's up? You're like, where are we going now? Like, what's happening?
And what just happened to him? Because he's like, oh, when my nostrils are open, I understand everything. You really are strong, Battle Wolf. And it's just like, but he's on his back and bleeding and his shirt's torn. It's like, was he trying to fight it? If so, wouldn't that mean he should be dead right now because it's the strongest of the eight kings?
It's like, what is the point? What is going on right now? I don't grasp it. It just seems so... It's just impossible for me to comprehend a chapter of Toriko recently. Like, I guess he fought the Battle Wolf and that awoke his senses and... Now he's like, well, I'm going to fight again. Like, it's just so uninteresting. It's not bad, like, Bleach is bad at points, or, like, many other series we talk about are. It's just incomprehensibly uninteresting.
Well, because my point is, the Dharma Horse breathed on Toriko and essentially killed him. He had to have the cure water and his gourmet demon and stuff go nutso in order to do it. Then Bambina tore his arm off by trying to dance with him. Mm-hmm. Then he meets the Battle Wolf and he just kind of ends up on his back, bleeding a little bit. What happened there? Was he overwhelmed by scent? What happened to him? I don't know what happened to him! Because so much stuff is happening, and yet I can't process any of it because it's all in this weird, muddled, out of order, literally 10 things happening at once. I don't know what's going on. Just stick with one thing and do it, even if it's as lame as that cookie competition that Yuta was doing.
I don't, like, it's weird to be like, why can't we go back to that? That seems so simple and
just
understandable.
Just on this constant downturn, because now I don't know, I can't even criticize this, because I don't know what's going on!
It is my least favorite thing to read each week at this point. Like, it's nothing.
Alright, let's move on.
Let's move on to something I do want to talk about, though.
World Trigger! Chapter!
I believe you mean... World Boo Trigger.
You're just saying that because you couldn't call it World Booger, aren't you?
There wasn't anywhere for me to fit Boo, so I just put Boo in. It's scary that way.
You could have called it World Trigger?
No, that wouldn't make sense. Boo. World Boo Trigger. That's pretty scary. Like, if I was walking through the... Are you... I think Nick's leaving. I think he's... Let's sit here and think about it for a little bit. Oh, wait, hold on. How about this? Something else to put on your hat. Let's get ready for World Trigger by Daisuke Bushihara.
All right, I have to save this. Get out. Yeah. You get up and leave now.
All right, I'll head out. Good luck, everybody.
Okay. Chapter 117, Yotaro Rindo. So, last time, a whole bunch of important people met up in a meeting room. We find out this time that it's because they know from Enidora that there might be another follow-up attack from Aftokrator, specifically because there are two kingdoms under Aftokrator's control that are now about to enter close orbit with their world. They don't know any of the details or anything. Enidora doesn't seem to know any of the details of the attack because, of course, it hasn't happened. And he's been away for a long time. Or maybe he's just, like, not telling them because he's a douchebag. Anyhow, they don't actually know for sure that anything's going to happen. But Jin has used his foresight, has been walking around trying to get visions and stuff, and he doesn't foresee any future in which people are kidnapped or killed from border or from within the city. Those visions might change, of course, at some point, but for now he doesn't seem to think so. So there's a question raised of, well, maybe they're not going to attack at all. But then, as Ozma says, they could be interested in, you know, gathering tech or info. And Kazama says, or they could, you know, take back their prisoners of war or try to kill their prisoners of war. So there might be a covert mission that's going on or something like that. And Shinoda says, you know, they're small countries, according to our data. So they won't have, presumably, very big invading forces. And Commander Kido eventually actually says that he wants them to confidentially carry out their defense. And because they know, or at least they very strongly suspect, it's not going to be a large-scale invasion, so they want to keep this on the down low so as not to drive the citizens into another state of panic. They want to be able to carry on with their operations and stuff without interference by the city, basically. And that is basically it. They make a few plans, like, oh, we'll notify Kako Squad, we'll notify Kusakabe and Katagiri Squads.
Those are two squads, but I don't think we've met, though, have we?
We've met Kako, and...
Met Kako, I know that, the female squad, but I don't recall Kusakabe or Katagiri.
Kusakabe seems to ring a bell. Maybe it's just because it's such a distinct name, but it doesn't show any characters from those teams in the page, so I assume we haven't seen them yet. And Asuma says, well, we might want to get Amo's help. Amo being the weird, young, black-haired kid who defeated all his papers.
Midorika was a member of them.
Ah, okay.
There we go.
And so they're like, I don't know if Amo will be suitable for the sneaky stuff. And Asuma says, we just need his side effect.
Interesting. We don't know what his side effect is.
What is it?
We don't know.
Oh. I thought you said we know.
No, we don't know. We know very little about this guy. Seemingly, he has
he's super powerful. That's all we know about him.
Well, we know he turns into something. I've been rereading the volumes digitally, and when they're planning that thing to kid, like, basically take Yuma's world, his world trigger, his black trigger, they bring up, we could bring in Amo, and he's like, well, we can't do that because what he turns into really won't look good for public perception. It's just like kind of like a monster thingy. I thought it was maybe like some ultra gravity field or something like that, but seemingly he actually turns into something that is horrifying. But yeah, no, I'm very interested to see what his side effect might be.
So, and Kido ends the meeting by saying to Jin, this plan is based on your foresight, so you're going to be busy. And that's the end of that. That actually makes up about half the chapter, which makes it kind of weird that the chapter is titled Yotaro Rindo.
I had to stop for like an hour and a half. I was like, who the fuck is Rindo? Who the fuck's Rindo? Who the fuck? God damn it, Yotaro's that stupid fucking kid. He has one line in his chapter, and somehow he's fucking the chapter title thing.
I really don't get it. Shouldn't the chapter be titled like Yusei or...
Border meeting.
Yeah, or something along those lines.
They're like, well, if we started naming them border meeting, there'd be 30 border meeting chapters. Yeah.
So we cut to Tamakoma 2's headquarters, and Osamu has just told the teachers that he tried to recruit Jin, and Konami's like, how could you come up with such a dirty move? Just because you lost once doesn't mean you get a free pass, and she puts him in, like, a one-armed headlock while holding her drink in the other hand. Just so casual about it.
At least he isn't, like, crying to get out. Like, he's still eating his food. I'd be upset. Yeah. I'd be upset if he's like, no, please!
Stop, don't hurt me!
I'd be like, no, she's not even trying. Please don't.
Yeah. So, Osama explains, I was just reminded that there were things I could do for the group besides getting stronger myself. So, Jin was just the first big idea that I had. And Konami says, well, what are you going to do now that Jin's refused? And he's like, well, I'm going to continue my training. We're going to come up with new strategies to work together, and I'm going to revise the meetup procedure after a match begins. And then we're going to see if there's anything more we can do with trigger combinations, and I'll ask Usami for advice and try out a few things. And Kami says, oh, you could ask for advice from Reiji. And Reiji says, well, you could ask for advice from you too. And she says, I suck at mechanics.
Fair enough. Yeah. Who's Usami, though? Why am I...
Usami is the operator.
Okay. All right. There we go. Makes sense.
Osamu says, one more thing. Jin said that there is someone more suitable than him for Tamakoma 2, but I can't figure it out. And they're like, oh, who could that be? Let's see. Strong, free, someone you know. And it's not about recruiting from another squad, right? And Yotaro's like, oh, brother. Don't you people get it? Jin is talking about...
The Capybara! I want that twist to happen.
My capybara!
And the capybara stands up, trigger, and it gets the uniform, and then just falls down on his side and goes to sleep.
Oh my god, if someone can draw that right now.
And it's like a chapter ends there, and then next week everyone's standing around like, when does he wake up? When he wants to.
Whenever he feels like it. Whenever it's time to be fed.
It's a cabaret bar. They don't do a lot.
But somehow he got through border training.
Somehow he's a B rank.
No, everyone ignored him, so he survived every single match.
People have really thought he could be A rank if he just put himself out there more. If he really put in the effort, he could be A rank.
But, you know, he is a capybara.
Yeah, they do what they do. He has a black trigger, though. Don't ask who gave their life for it. But he has one. What does it do? It makes a pillow so he can sleep anywhere he wants.
So Yotaro's like, Jin's talking about Husei. Come on, guys. And everyone just looks like over at Husei, who's sitting next to Yotaro on the couch. He's just kind of staring at them while he eats.
Also, he doesn't understand chopsticks because he's holding it like a dragon claw.
Completely wrong. I fucking love that, actually. Of course he wouldn't know how to use them properly. He's not from Earth, let alone Japan.
But I like that it's not. I like that it's not that he had like he doesn't just know how to use it. It's that he doesn't know how to use it, but he's clearly thought he's figured it out because he's got like the dragon claw style. Like, this clearly must be how you eat things.
So like, what are you talking about, Husei? And Yotaro says, Husei is perfectly capable. I taught him many things. This super soldier from the fucking neighborhood. Yeah. He's good to fight because I, the 12-year-old, taught him a lot of stuff about how to fight. Oh, God. Yusei's just like, stop leaning on my shoulder, you little puss. So Osama's like, well, it does kind of make sense with what Jin told me. And Yusei says, so that's what that bet was about. What are you talking about? And Yotaro says, we bet whether you would win yesterday. And the loser would do what the winner asked. Jin bet that you would win. And I bet my snacks, too. Bet your snacks. It's okay. It's all in the past.
I love that fucking Osamu actually seems to be, like, feeling guilty about that. He's like, oh, your snacks. I'm like, Osamu, for the love of God. You cannot. Look, I'm Catholic. I know what it's like to just be burdened with constant guilt over everything. But for the love of God, you can't hold too much stock in the fact that you unintentionally cost this kid snacks. He's eating now. He's not that concerned.
I'm being told Yotaro is actually 6. I somehow do not believe you. He doesn't seem that young, honestly. Maybe 8. I don't know.
Well, it's tough for me. I've been recently watching Gravity Falls, and I feel like these characters are drawn with the same proportions, but the kids in that are supposed to be 12, yet this dude's 6. I feel like cartoons have lied to me, Nick. I have no idea how to tell what age a child is.
He's significantly chubbier than they are, which makes more sense for younger kids, but I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, Husei says, well, you know, if you had won, Jin was probably going to get me to join Tamakoa, but too bad. I have no intention of working with you. But Konami actually points out, well, it doesn't matter whether you would or not, because HQ would probably never let that happen. You know, getting picked for the away teams with you on board, not that, they would never do that. Reiji is thinking to himself, well, maybe that they would take him to negotiate a hostage exchange. Well, though it would still be impossible for him to be on the team. I don't know. Osamu is still thinking about it, though, when Yuma and Chika show up, and Yuma says, Chika's gonna go to join sniper training, and I was summoned by Mr. Kinuta. And Osamu says, well, I'll go with you too, then. And then they head off. And Konami says, so what did Husei use the bet for? And Yotaro says, he hasn't used the bet yet because he says he can't trust Jin. So, interesting, because, you know, Jin sold him on the idea of, you know, maybe you can use this to get your trigger back and stuff, and Husei's still biding his time to cash in on that favor.
I do love that logic, though, too, of, like, I can't trust Jin. I can't trust what you're gonna fucking... If I give you the first thing, you probably want me to do that, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, he's got his foresight. Oh, what if he knows I'm gonna do this? And what if he knows that I'm not gonna do this? Or, best not to do anything now and stuff. And the chapter ends on kind of a weird note, as Shinoda is driving them all to headquarters, and, you know, Osamu's alone with his thoughts, and he's thinking about what Jin told him about, you know, oh, this is your strength. You know, you recognize your weakness and you do whatever you can to overcome them. And someone's like, Jin gave us this clue. I can't make assumptions without making sure, though. And we cut to where Enidora, his little, I guess, device is hooked up. Not sure exactly what we're meant to gather from this, and I was very confused when I first saw it.
From the Shonen Jump podcast, they say that he's watching Terminator 2.
That does look like it, yeah.
It does. I'm still on the same thought you are, though. I'm like, what am I supposed to glean from this? Like, okay, maybe they're like, Enidora, maybe a prisoner from us will give him, you know, our media to enjoy. But I still don't grasp why that would be the final panel or something. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, are they, like, planning to build, like, some robotic skeleton suit for Enidora to use? Like, are they researching something like that? Now I'm just very confused, just watching Terminator 2.
And the guy who's overlooking it, you can see he's eating a snack, too. Because, you know, he's just lazing around and stuff. He's like, oh, just got a desk job, whatever, don't bother me. That was what we knew about him. But yeah, it's so weird that he's just, like, got the little crab hooked up, he's just sitting right next to it, and he's watching something. Maybe it's Terminator 2? It could very well be, honestly, but why?
I don't know.
And I guess maybe they're saying that somehow Enidora is the one that should be on their team, which, first of all, he's way more unstable and unpredictable
he's way
than
super
you
evil.
Say. He's a psychopath, and he has no body.
I can grasp the idea that they're like, oh yeah, well, the dude in Terminator turned into liquid metal, and that's kind of what Enidora could do. But right. I'm still like, what is that? What does this imply, though? Are you building him a suit that can do the same? It seems like a bad idea. I know he wants revenge on them, but he seems like an untrustworthy guy. I don't know. I want to find out more. I'm very excited about things. I'm getting really into World Trigger. I mean, I'd say that is all I ever stopped being into it, but I'm getting into it even more again since I've been catching up on the digital volumes. And I've been kind of going through this again. I'm like, oh, there's so much. Now I can comprehend so much more about this series. Because I'm reading character names from back then, and I can grasp who they are now. And I'm going to remember names going forward. Nick, do you remember? Shit, I was going to pull out a name that I remembered that we wouldn't, and I'd forgotten everybody. Kodera? Do you remember Kodera, Nick? He's the sniper for Miwa Squad. Well, one of them. They have two. I don't know the other one's name. He's boring, though. He doesn't do anything. But Kodera's on their team. I'm excited for World Trigger is what I'm trying to say. Okay. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen next week. I'm hoping we get a consistent delivery of World Trigger chapters. We don't get any more unexpected breaks or anything like that. Because I'm super pumped for where things are going.
Yes.
Also, I just want to note, this chapter begins with not Kido. I forget the other commander's name.
Shinoda.
It starts with Shinoda saying, let's get down to business, and I can't hear that line. I really feel like it had to be intentional in the team, because I can't hear that line without being immediately following the fucking Make a Man Out of You song.
Did they send me B-ranks when I asked for A's?
I need to spend time writing the parody song of this.
Go for it. That'll be the precursor to World Trigger to My Heart and Back Door or something like that. Oh, and I
somehow I'll make a man out of Osamu.
That's not too bad. I looked in the back of Shonen Jump to see if anything Ashihara said might lend anything to this. He does not talk about the manga at all. He just says the person who invented the non-itchy medicated bandage deserves the Nobel Prize. The Nobel Bandage Prize. Ashihara is so funny.
I love this guy. I'm reading the volumes, and I got to the one bit where they have like an omake thing to when Kitora was in that spread that the Food Wars guy drew.
Yeah.
So it's all the guys reacting to it. It's like Osamu and I think like Yotera or whatever, the spear guy, and someone else. And they're just like, oh, Kitora, and, you know, it was in this. And someone even knows, like, why isn't Chika in this? And she, like, pays it off. She's like, it was a PR thing. I didn't choose to be in bikini. I just am. And then, like, she takes the magazine away, and she's like, go home, boys, and they do. And then, like, it cuts to her in her room, and she's looking at the magazine. She's like, I'm so sexy. I'm just like, oh, thank you so much, Ashihara. You make this next part so much easier to write.
It's fine to have confidence in your looks.
Yeah.
It's good. That's good. That's good self-image. Good on you, Kitora.
I just love that she took it and just goes.
But she's got to have that reputation as being an ice queen, so yeah.
Yeah. Seriously, if you don't own the, if you like World Trigger and you don't own the volumes, absolutely, I recommend picking them up because, like, any extra material within it are just gold.
All right, that is gonna do.
Ooh, and actually, on that note, Annalisa, friend of the show, just posted up a contest. She has a couple of World Trigger straps, like those keychain dealies. She's giving away, and all you have to do is tweet at her with a picture of your World Trigger collection, either physical or digital, and a hashtag with it, and you can be entered to potentially win one of these keychain straps.
Awesome.
So there you go.
All right. That is going to do it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for Weekly Manga Recap. We record the show generally on twitch.tv/RoloT Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up. To stay up to date, follow us on Twitter. He's at RoloT, and I'm at YRulerOfTime. We also have an official at WMR podcast that Chris runs for specifically manga-related stuff. You can also check out our past episodes on weeklymangarecap.podbean.com, and also subscribe to us on iTunes. Plus, make sure you leave a comment or rating on that second one so that we can beat the woodworking podcast people.
No one can beat them, Nick. They're unstoppable.
So we can continue the fruitless battle against them.
Yes. You do what you can. It's an uphill battle. But someone... You know what? You gotta do that fight. Like, in the immortal words of Captain America, that I don't actually... I'm not quoting anything. I just feel like this is something you'd say. It's not about winning the battle. It's about fighting the battle. You just gotta do it. Even if you can't win... You gotta go out there and put in your 9-to-5 against the woodworkers to find out if you can beat them. And most of the time you can't. They're unstoppable. What are you going to do? But you try. Also, give credit to Game of Moans, who says, WMR rules. As a person who couldn't bother keeping up with the BS of Bleach and Naruto, WMR were my knights in shining armor.
Aww.
Also, Game of Moans, pretty amusing.
That's good. Also, you can send us criticism, questions, and suggestions to our email address, weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. We'll host a Q&A session late in the future. We've got to figure out what manga we're going to read and so on and so forth. And we just appreciate the general feedback. So send that again to weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Special thanks go out to all of our Patreon supporters. Your support allows us to create all sorts of bonus content for you guys to enjoy. And in fact, we just recently passed the next milestone on Patreon, so we're going to be doing something else special for you guys starting soon.
Yes. We have reached our next goal, which will be a monthly anime movie stream commentary. Nick and I will be streaming us commenting on the movie. We won't be showing the movie, because obviously that's illegal, but we'll be playing the movie, watching it ourselves, doing a commentary over it so you guys can join us, watch it with it, and then we'll record it and make it available through the Patreon to everybody. You don't have to be a patron to get it, so people who could get it later can watch the movie on themselves and still enjoy it.
So you can sync it up and watch it like a bit of a Riff Tracks thing, although we are not actually going to script all this stuff.
Oh, God, no.
That requires to watch a movie 8 times as opposed to once.
I have not the patience for that, especially since a lot of these movies are going to be like, Nick, I didn't watch Sailor Moon. What is this plot doing? What are all these Dragon Ball characters doing? Nick, I know Cell and Majin Buu. Who are all these other people? Who's this white guy?
Well, he is a guy who showed up in this one movie only, so that's the only backstory you need in order to comment on what's going on. No, that's too much work.
Yeah, that's...
Tell me everything.
I can't do this, Nick. I need a syllabus. Also, want to give thanks to Dante Griffith and Eugenia for becoming our newest patrons. It is greatly appreciated, both of you.
Yeah. Special thanks also go out to Steve Mann, our target artist. Check out his work at many, many locations. There's drivebooz@tumblr.com. He's got like 2 Tumblrs, I think. And he's also got a Patreon, patreon.com/Steve Mann. Go support him and stuff. There's like 800 places to find the guy now. I can't list all of them anymore. I'm sorry. Also, special thanks to The Infamous Planet, as well as Felix Stark, for making the awesome visual editions of our podcast, too. Those are great.
Yes.
So yeah, next week we should have Monster to talk about.
I'm pumped for this, Nick. I'm so excited to get to talk about Urasawa again. It's been too long.
It's been, how long ago did we do 20th Century Boys?
2 years ago, I think, at least.
Right around there, I guess, yeah.
So it's been a little bit. And then that'll be two of the three Urasawa series that I've completely read. If we ever do Pluto, then I'll be like, oh, any Urasawa from here on is new to me. Although the only one I know really had a lot of like mainstream popularity would be Billy Bat. And I did read part of that, and then I got lost because I was like, you know, to current Toriko is easier to follow than this shit.
The problem is that Urasawa has written a lot of different types of series, so.
And they're all very long.
But yeah, that's it. That's the weekly manga recap for this week. Actually, a little bit shorter than we normally do. So, but yeah, we'll have presumably a pretty packed discussion next time to make up for it.
Yeah, oh, God, next week should be ridiculously huge. Any thoughts you want to get out there?
Your puns are terrible, and I hate you.
Do you want me to come in next week with new puns or the same puns delivered better?
No.
Where I'm like, Nick, it's time for Saman the Sambooner. You're like, Saman's not even in the magazine this week. You're an asshole and you're wrong.
what would you have done for Mononofu?
Bunumofu, probably.
No!
I really...
Non-bufu!
I really just tried to fit Boo in as many as possible, and if I could...
Mononobu, come on!
Yeah, I can't even see the name of it non-spookified. Mononobu? It's like banana. I can't... I put too many N's in, or N's in there. Like, banana-na-na-na. It's like, mononobu.
Banana-na.
There's too many in there.